Welcome to Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. Just a month remains for Congress to come to a resolution on raising the federal debt ceiling, but it's looking more and more likely that isn't within reach politically. President Obama is telling members of Congress to work harder and postpone their vacations. I caught up with Utah Congressman Jim Matheson, a Blue Dog Democrat, earlier this week for a conversation about the debt ceiling, the war in Afghanistan, wilderness, and congressional redistricting. Congressman Matheson, welcome to Politics Up Close. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be here.
Congressman, how do you feel about the current state of negotiations over the debt ceiling and what's going to happen come August?
I would have preferred that the issue would be resolved before the last second. I sense we are going to be coming down to the last second, but I actually have confidence that at the end of the day, some reasonable negotiated settlement could very well happen.
Although it's not looking too optimistic right now, is it?
Well, listen, I think this is some people in Washington like to play games where they stake out certain positions. And, you know, this is all part of a negotiating ploy in some ways, from all sides, by the way. I'm not singling out anyone in particular. But at the end of the day, as happened when there was a potential government shutdown last spring, as the clock tends to be approaching midnight, suddenly a deal comes through. And I wouldn't be surprised that happens again here.
What do you think of the Republican strategy that, you know, not only can no tax increases be on the table, but even, you know, closing what are commonly referred to as tax loopholes can't be on the table as well? What do you think of that position?
Well, I think, first of all, everything ought to be on the table. And I think Democrats have things they don't want to put on the table either. And I think everything ought to be on the table for discussion. I think that's a responsible way to go about doing business. I do think that we have to also say that if we decide to eliminate a tax subsidy for a certain special interest, that the notion that that is called raising taxes is something that I hope we can move beyond that. Because there are a lot of opportunities within our tax code to take actions that will make it simpler, more transparent, more fair, and quite candidly, if you really want to be aggressive about going after lots of tax deductions and credits and preferences, you could actually arguably lower the actual tax rates and still take in more revenue. So there really is an opportunity here to perhaps create a fairer, more transparent tax code, and I think that ought to be on the table.
How do you feel specifically about subsidies for, you know, energy companies, which has always been a very hot topic here in Utah? Do you think eliminating them hurts consumers, or do you think eliminating them helps the federal budget in the long run?
I think you have to take a look at the fact that a lot of these subsidies are actually manufacturing subsidies in general, and really not. There's a group of subsidies that are tax preferences that are not limited to the energy industry. In fact, in some respects, the manufacturing industry receives a more generous form of tax credit or deduction, if you will, than does the oil and gas industry, for example. So I think it would be helpful to put all of these items on the table and have a discussion about what we think is appropriate tax policy for business in general. I think when policy gets even more skewed and, quite frankly, reduces confidence in our system among the public and creates more cynicism is when there are industry-specific tax breaks. You know, ethanol is a great example.
Right.
I'd like to have a discussion where we put these broad issues on the table, as did the president's Deficit Reduction Commission, the Simpson-Bowles Commission. They put all these items on the table, and I think that's the type of discussion that would be most productive.
Congressman Matheson, some Utah lawmakers are signing on to this cut, cap, and balance pledge to both cut and cap spending levels and pass a balanced budget amendment. Now, I'm pretty sure you've been in favor of a balanced budget amendment. What do you think of this pledge here?
Well, I think, you know, in my career, I've never signed a pledge. I think that at the end of the day, you say what you believe, and you know, my word is my bond, and I think my constituents know that. So that's how I view any issue. I think that when we talk about cutting spending, I'm for cutting spending, but we ought to talk about where we're cutting and how much and how it's done. When we talk about capping spending, I think putting in structural spending caps is a good idea as a concept. Again, the structure of them, the specific nature of them needs to be worked out. And finally, balanced budget amendment. There's more than one balanced budget amendment out there right now. There are, I think, two or three actually proposed amendments that have different provisions associated with them. I have also said I support having a balanced budget amendment. But again, details matter. And I think that responsible and statesmanlike effort on the part of Congress ought to be taking place to come up with the best way to structure those details.
Do you think a balanced budget amendment is going to be feasible while you are still in Congress? Is it something that can be passed within the next couple of years?
Well, I think that there could very well be an opportunity for a balanced budget amendment to pass Congress. Of course, then it would have to be ratified by 75% of the states before it would be included as an amendment to our Constitution. That could very well take some time, but that would be, I don't know if I have any special insight into how long it would take for states to do that or not, but it could very well take a few years.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. We're speaking with Utah Democratic Congressman Jim Matheson. Congressman, moving on, the Interior Department recently withdrew its plans to designate wild lands in states like Utah without congressional approval. Most Utah leaders have applauded this decision, but of course conservationists are upset. Do you think it was the right call to shelve wild lands?
Well, I think it was, because I don't think you're ever going to resolve public lands issues with a top-down approach from Washington, D.C. And in fact, the Department of Interior had testified exactly that way in front of congressional committees in the past couple of years. So when they came out with the wildlands policy, it seemed to me to be a 180-degree reversal of where they were in terms of previously they'd said we need a bottom-up, locally driven stakeholder approach to deal with public lands issues. And in fact, Mr. Abbey, the head of the BLM, testified for Congress saying the example of how to do it is the Washington County Lands Bill that was done by Senator Bennett and Congressman Matheson in Utah. So I still believe, having spent my life in Utah and seen how contentious public lands issues can be, that in my opinion, while the passions run high, if you want to truly move forward and develop consensus, you need to get everyone sitting around the table, and there are more than two points of view. In fact, we had 23 different stakeholders in Washington County, just to point that out. And I think a locally driven process is really the best way to resolve issues.
But is the locally driven process too slow? Certainly it is too slow for some people.
Well, the fact of the matter is that the last major wilderness bill passed relative to the state of Utah was the Washington County bill. Mm-hmm. And before that, you got to go back, other than there was the issue in Tooele County to stop the nuclear waste from coming to the Skull Valley Reservation.
Right.
But there were other issues associated with that bill, obviously. Before that, it was 1984. Was the last time a wilderness bill happened in Utah. So I think that that if you really want to make progress, these are hard, complicated issues, and it does take time. But if you look at the track record going back over the last few decades, the most recent success was based on taking the time to really build consensus on a local basis.
I understand that Emory, San Juan, and Paiute counties are coming up with some wilderness plans they hope to present to Congress. Have you been working with them on these proposals?
To be honest, we've attended some meetings with relative to the Paiute process, but we've not had, my office has not really been that involved with the other two. And I think it's important that the process, these do take time. You got to make sure they're done where everyone has an opportunity to engage. And, Washington County took 5 years. And so I can just tell you my office has not been much involved in the other two.
Since it is a new Congress, do you intend to bring back your wilderness bill to protect Salt Lake County's watershed this Congress?
Yes, I do. In fact, the only reason we haven't introduced the bill yet is, we got a lot of feedback and a lot of input, and we had a hearing on the bill in the last Congress, and we want to make sure we draft it in a way to try to resolve a couple of the outstanding issues the Forest Service raised about a land transfer issue. So the substance of the bill, quite frankly, is basically the same as it was in the last Congress, but we are trying to check off a couple of the concerns that have been raised, because if we get that right, that gives a better opportunity for the bill to move forward. So I do intend to introduce it. I don't know an exact timeline, but we're actually talking about doing it sometime this summer.
Congressman Matheson, President Obama, of course, just recently gave a big speech on the war in Afghanistan. It seems that more and more of the focus on the war has been lately on the cost, with $10 billion a month being spent there.
President Obama is now saying we need to focus more on nation building at home, but the pace of his proposed troop withdrawal isn't quickly enough for some elected officials. What do you think of the president's latest speech on Afghanistan?
Well, I think the speech, if nothing else, the speech really laid out all the issues that he's had to consider and that I think everyone ought to consider about priorities at home and abroad and the nature of the mission there and trying to listen to the military and trying to find a way for a path forward to withdrawal, which his ultimate withdrawal date, I believe, is for all troops is in the year 2014. He did make good on his promise to take all combat troops out of Iraq by the date he did. There are 50,000 non-combat troops in Iraq. I think they may start coming home pretty quick as well. You're correct in what you said in your question. Though there are some members of Congress who think that the troop withdrawal from Afghanistan should happen on a more rapid pace. On the other hand, there are others who argue that there shouldn't be any withdrawal. So I think there are lots of points of view on this, but I think the president is trying to follow, based on the advice he's given from the military, a prudent course to ultimately draw down these troops. My question, and I think it still hasn't really been answered in a way satisfactory to me, and maybe a lot of other people feel this way, is I just don't think we know exactly what the purpose is or the mission is here and how we measure progress.
Mm-hmm.
That's my frustration. There's a concern that if we pull the troops out, that you'll have a regression, if you will, of circumstances in Afghanistan, and the Taliban could take hold again, and Al Qaeda could once again have an opportunity for a recruitment and training ground. The question you got to ask about that is would that potential for that regression or reversal of direction be any greater 5 years from now or the same? Hmm. If we stay for 5 years or not, there's always going to be that potential, I guess is the point. I'm not sure I'm articulating that well, but there's always going to be that potential for things to turn turn in the wrong way after troops withdrawn. And so that can't be the sole reason to leave troops there. I think you have to have a defined mission, a defined goal for what completes the mission.
Would you say then that there is some merit to the idea of bringing them home much more quickly and saving more money?
Well, I think there's merit to bringing them home, absent having some justification for here's the defined mission, here's the path that we think it takes to get there with the troops. I think that's the case, in my opinion, still needs to be made.
What do you think of the current intervention in Libya with us spending money there without congressional authorization as yet so far?
It's interesting. If you look at the War Powers Act in 1973, the president is given the authority to initiate action for up to 60 days without mm-hmm. congressional authorization. Of course, the action in Libya has been longer than 60 days now. The House of Representatives actually took two different votes last week that really left no clarity of policy from the House of Representatives' mm-hmm. perspective. There was a vote to give the president the authorization to maintain the limited engagement with no ground troops. That failed. Then there was a bill to say, well, let's just stop all the funding and bring it home, and that failed as well. So the message from the U.S. House of Representatives, we're not going to say you can be there, and we're not going to say you can't, which isn't very helpful in my opinion. Listen, I think that it's important to look at each of these circumstances on its own merits. You know, Iraq has its dynamics, Afghanistan has its dynamics, and Libya has its dynamics. And I think that in the case of Libya, the president probably should have engaged Congress a lot more quickly and more substantively and more continually than he has since it started. I think he should have done that. I think it's a mistake he didn't engage Congress more. Now, on the other hand, since Congress actually did not vote to withdraw the funding, at least the House didn't, in the time being, we are where we are, which is the action still going on the ground and the authorization hasn't happened.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. We're speaking with Utah Congressman Jim Matheson from Utah's 2nd Congressional District. Congressman, turning to the economy, once this debt ceiling crisis or, you know, impasse is resolved, what do you think really needs to be done to, avoid a double-dip recession in this country?
Well, I think, first of all, sending a signal to consumers in the United States, to businesses in the United States, and to capital markets around the world that the United States government is going to change its course in a true, real way to move toward a balanced budget will have a positive impact on the economy. I think that's it. So I think resolving the debt crisis, where it's not just raising the debt limit, but actually having a substantive change in course, I think that will help our economy because it'll create a certain confidence among all those entities I just mentioned. Secondly, I think we ought to look at ways to engage in increasing investment in our country. One thing I think we should do is that the U.S. has a rather limited approach to how its U.S. companies, if they earn profits overseas, how we handle those earnings. Mm. Only five countries in the world tax overseas profits the way the United States does. And so, and the way we do it is we really discourage U.S. companies from bringing their earnings home. And isn't that backward? We want U.S. companies to be based in the U.S., make their products, sell them overseas, make money, and bring that money back here. And so I've introduced legislation that will allow them a one-year window to bring back these earnings at a reduced tax rate, so they'll still pay taxes on it, but it could infuse our economy with several hundred billion dollars. It's estimated there's $1.5 trillion stranded overseas with U.S. companies' earnings. And so if a certain percentage of that comes through, I think that would really be one thing that could be a shot in the arm to our economy. And there are a lot of other things we should be talking about, but I thought I'd give a specific answer about one thing I think we could do that would really help.
Congressman, you know better than anyone else the impacts of Utah's redistricting process, which, of course, is still a hot topic here in Salt Lake City, and it's done by the Republican-controlled legislature. From what you've seen of this year's redistricting so far, does it look to you like they are once again approaching it with the goal of making it impossible for you to win re-election?
Well, I think it's clear that it's going to end up being another partisan gerrymander, both for congressional districts and for state legislative districts, and I have no reason to believe otherwise. There's been no indication that would make anyone believe otherwise, in my opinion. Our legislature has a track record. It's established in the past of behaving that way, and I'm not clear that I see any indication they're going to change.
Will the way redistricting turns out affect what you do in the 2012 election?
It's clearly a factor in my decision-making for what I'm doing in the future. And it's not the sole factor, but it is a factor. And you know, that's when the redistricting happens, which I've heard is going to be sometime in the fall,
right?
September-October time frame. You know, that's going to be an important thing when I figure out what I'm doing the following year.
Your district, you know, spanning from Salt Lake all the way to Washington County, has enabled you to be, you know, actively involved in both rural and urban issues, you know, especially with the Washington County Wilderness Bill. Do you think that gives any merit to some lawmakers' plans to, you know, split Salt Lake County four ways and make it so that every district is exactly the same?
Well, there are actually two responses I'll give you to that. The first is, in fact, Washington County is a metro area, not a rural county anymore. It's got 140,000 people. So part of what drove that lands bill was the rapid growth and the increasing population in that particular county. Listen, I think whatever the legislators say about urban-rural mix is really that's not why they're doing this. They're doing it to split up, to create Republican districts. It's all part of a partisan gerrymander agenda. They can dress it up however they want, and they can describe it under whatever other terms they want, but the reality is we all know what the motivation is here, and it's to do a partisan gerrymander.
Speaking of specific races, Congressman, would you say you are actively considering both U.S. Senate and the governor's race?
Look, I've been real clear. There are three races on the table I look at for next year. It's running again for Congress, it's running for Senator, it's running for governor. I've made no secret about that. I've been real upfront about it.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. We're speaking with Utah Congressman Jim Matheson. Congressman, there's been a focus lately on tension within Utah's delegation, especially on the Republican side, between Congressman Chaffetz and Senator Hatch. How do you feel, you know, the working relationship is between everybody there in Washington right now?
Well, my relationship with all of them is great. I've always gotten along with our delegation over the years. Different members have come and gone during that time, but I've found that there's so many issues out there that really don't break on party lines. They really break on regional lines, big state, small state, east, west, whatever. And, you know, there are a lot of Utah-specific issues where the delegation has coordinated with each other and worked really well. So I have no complaints about my relationship with them. I've always dealt with them like I deal with anyone in my life, which is I'm just real straight up and honest. And if I agree or disagree, I just tell them to their face and do it. And I act as a gentleman, and my relationship's fine.
Congressman, today, the day that we're taping this interview, former Utah Governor John Huntsman is returning to his home state, touring a local company, Nelson Laboratories. Now, of course, you're a Democrat, but were you excited in some way to see Governor Huntsman get into this race?
Oh, I think, you know, it's always kind of fun. Well, I shouldn't say always fun. It rarely happens. It's fun to when you're from a small state like Utah to have someone from your state running for president. It just doesn't happen that often. And you know, John is someone who I got to know when he was governor and I was in Congress. And so, sure, I think that's interesting. And regardless of what party or regardless how you feel about all the candidates, I think that always makes the race more interesting for folks living here.
Do you get the sense that in the 2012 election, you know, Republicans control the House right now, but they do not control the Senate? Do you get the sense that Democrats have any shot at taking back the House or holding on to the Senate? What are your thoughts right now?
I think that we are in an era of great volatility in election politics, and I think things can change a lot every 2 years. And so I think that things are always up for grabs now, more so than maybe they've been in the past. And I think traditionally, if you look at politics, incumbents win more often than challengers. But the margin in the House is 24 seats. That's not very many out of 435. So I think the House could very well be in play. And, of course, the Senate. I think the margin right now is 53-47. So, you know, I think they're both going to be up for grabs.
And finally, Congressman Matheson, going back to one economic issue I was just thinking about, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong here, is that the president has a free trade agreements before him right now with countries like Colombia, for example, that have not been signed because he doesn't think that they have they provide appropriate job training for displaced workers in the U.S. when these agreements are enacted. Do you think that might be hurting the economy right now, and do you think you should sign them?
Yeah, the issue here is that the United States historically has had something that's called it's a trade adjustment bill, if you will, that assists workers in the U.S. who have perhaps been affected in a negative way by opening foreign markets. We need to, as a country, develop consensus on what a trade adjustment policy should be, coupled with these trade agreements. Actually, the Colombia agreement, the Panama agreement, and the third is with Korea, are all agreements where U.S. exports will increase and it will improve our trade deficit numbers if we sign these agreements. And so I would like to think we could resolve this trade assistance component of it, which is more of a domestic policy. Colombia, Panama, and Korea don't have to sign that. This is what in the politics of the U.S. really is talking about in terms of having this coupled with these trade agreements. But I think it could clearly help this economy, clearly will help the Utah economy, which a lot of people don't realize, you know, about a fifth of all we manufacture in Utah is actually exported overseas right now, and opening these markets is really going to help Utah businesses export even more. So I hope we can reach resolution on those issues because I think it would give a boost to our economy.
We've been speaking with Democratic Utah Congressman Jim Matheson of the state's 2nd Congressional District. Congressman Matheson, it's good to talk to you.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it.